All right, Mark chapter 7 and verse 31 is where we'll pick up. And let's read through 37. Mark 7, 31 through 37. Again, departing from the region of Tyre and Sidon, he came through the midst of the region of Decapolis to the Sea of Galilee. Then they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to put his hand on him. And he took him aside from the multitude and put his fingers in his ears and spat and touched his tongue. Then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." Immediately his ears were opened and the impediment of his tongue was loosed and he spoke plainly. Then he commanded them that they should tell no one. But the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, "He has done all things well. He makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." So here is a great miracle recorded. And if you look at Matthew's account, we see that it was just one of many. That there was a number of things he was doing. Mark just highlights one of the miracles. Now, where is this being done?
It's around the Sea of Galilee.
Okay. Yes. And does anyone remember what Decapolis means?
Something 10.
That's right. Deca, 10. Polis is the Greek word for city. So 10 cities. Now, when was the last time we saw Decapolis? Does anyone remember? There was a great miracle worked there.
That's not when he fed the
5,000. No, but that would have been a good guess. There was two demon-possessed men. And it went by the name Legion.
Were they he?
That's right.
The swine.
And no one can even chain them. And potentially thousands of demons were inside them. And Jesus, with his great power, took them all out. And they went into the swine. The swine then went crazy and went off the cliff and drowned in the water. And do you remember what the people said to Jesus there?
They wanted to leave.
Please, go. Leave. Now they're singing a different tune, aren't they? Please help us.
Bringing people to
them. Yes, please stay. So, there's a few lessons I think we can learn from that. First off, do you remember what happened to Legion, the men? What did he tell them to do?
Go back and tell people what he had done.
Right. And it said that he preached and spoke of Jesus throughout Decapolis. So, here we see this man who was probably widely known in the area for all the wrong reasons. Now people seeing a transformed man before them, clothed and in his right mind, saying, "Jesus is the one that did this to me. Jesus is the one that has the power." And I believe we see some fruit of his labor. You know, that like Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 that, you know, he watered he soiled and then the other one watered. Let me just read it. I'm not going to mess it up, butcher it anymore. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, you can tell that's one that I didn't put in my notes. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, there it is, verse 6. "I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase." And so my point was that this demon-possessed man, or formerly demon-possessed man, was doing this planting and watering. And in time, the Lord comes and gives the increase. So that gives us, I believe, at least does me, a lot of hope to know that, okay, if I keep doing the work, in time the increase will come by the good Lord's hand. And it could even reverse things. Here are people at first were saying, go away, and now are saying, come and stay. So that gives me and good encouragement to know that people that have rejected me here, or people that have turned away studies or admonitions, that given enough time and enough watering and planting, perhaps some can have a change of heart. Because here was a region that did not want Jesus, and now they do. So that's encouraging. That's encouraging. Now, what we see take place is one miracle that Mark decided to highlight. Now step me through this. What happened to this man? What was he like at first?
Couldn't speak or hear.
Okay. So couldn't speak, couldn't hear. So that means he could see, right? So if Jesus was to come up to him and say, "I'm Jesus," he's not going to hear that, is he? He's not going to hear any of the teaching that the Lord has given. Okay? And so he can't hear and he can't speak to the Lord. And yet the Lord is still going to work a miracle on him. Now, how did the Lord do this miracle?
This was it said that he spat and touched his tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And that he put his fingers in his ears.
Okay.
And it was kind of interesting in the book, it said something about how that we don't know if it was his ears or the Lord's ears. He put his fingers in. And I've not ever heard anybody talk either way about that.
Yeah, I think the first image that comes to your mind is he was doing, the miracles would be done on him. It would be strange for the Lord to go like this. I guess it's possible, but it'd be strange. Did the Lord have to touch him at all?
Oh, no.
Didn't even have to be in his presence, did he?
No.
So evidently, you know, these extras are by design for the people to see. You know, this is the Lord's doing. And the areas are being highlighted, the tongue and the ears. And so then what does he do next? Looks up to...
Oh, heaven, and he says that...
Right?
How do you sort of pronounce that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's an Aramaic word.
Mm-hmm. Which means be open.
Mm-hmm. And before that, he sighed, right? He sighed.
Yeah.
When do we sigh?
Sometimes when you're exasperated.
Okay.
But sometimes, too, you just as a relief, maybe a release.
Okay, a relief, a release. Were you going to say something, Nancy? No? Okay. Right. I mean, here's this man... he was born, or well, he may have been born, so I'm not sure. But either way, he's not operating the way the human body was designed to operate. And this causes some heartache, I believe, for the Lord. And he is moved with compassion. He cares. And so he wants to do something to take care of this man. Again, we see the compassion of Jesus that when something doesn't work in our bodies correctly, or there is a disease or something that's amiss, to think that he's aloof or doesn't care is not the Bible picture of Jesus. And I like what one commentary said, was that perhaps his sigh was to think that he couldn't or wouldn't heal all those that had their ears closed and tongues not able to speak. And that this, you know, was a small thing that he could do. But his mission wasn't for that, obviously, as we've noted before. But he cares for this person personally.
This man must have felt so isolated and lonely. I mean, he wouldn't have experienced very much joy at all in his life. It was definitely the woman who had the problem with her menstrual period. She was, pushed away and isolated.
Right.
But she went to Jesus, and he knew nothing about her.
Right. And so we see, again, the compassion of the Lord to go to him and heal him.
What I think about this, too, is, he had friends that brought him to Jesus. Like the guy that was let down from the roof. And two, I don't know if I'm reading into this or not, but today, you know, our friends are very important. And do we let them help us? Because there are some people that have friends who are trying to help them, you know, lead them to the Lord, but are they letting them?
Right, right.
And so here it shows a, you know, I think a spirit of humility on his part too, because he is letting his friends lead him
right
to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't let anybody help them. They choose to stay in their own world,
right,
so to speak.
And to their detriment.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. We all need help.
Yeah.
We all need help. That's right. Yes.
This guy, this man, he took what Jesus gave him, the way Jesus gave it to him. He wanted his way. Don't sit and put your hand on me.
Yeah.
You know, he can't talk, but you still can see. But he accepted what Jesus gave him the way it was.
Right.
So that's what we have to do, is take what Jesus has given us as the gospel the way it is and not do it our way.
Right, right. Very good. Good. Even if it didn't seem natural. Right.
Like that idea of touch.
Mm.
Angela was saying, some people just back away and don't want the touch of Jesus.
Anybody else? I like what they said at the end of verse 37, where they were astonished beyond measure and saying, he has done all things well. That's as fine a statement as you ever would hear. He does all things well. And what a great way to summarize, you know, the Lord. And I think about Deuteronomy, where it says, you know, all these things were for their good always. And so even the hardships, you know. This man probably would not have chose to be like this. But here he is now being a highlight of something that the Lord did in his ministry. All right. If there's no further thoughts, go ahead. Right. Right. That's right. In Isaiah, he was. And here, the deaf are able to hear and to be able to speak, the mute to speak, they say. So in chapter 8.
Steve.
Uh huh.
I wonder how Jesus felt, because in verse 36, he commanded them to go and kill no one. But the more he commanded them not to.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
And I wonder.
Yeah.
His thoughts, of course, we don't know.
Well, this goes back to what Angela said, you know, that, you know, we don't understand sometimes the reason behind the command, but he has them, you know, and it's upon us to, by faith, obey them. I like what the author said in the book. I don't know if you read that section on page 116, where he said, near the bottom of that page, he says, these were those who had seen this occur, and Jesus urged them not to speak of it. But excitement got the better of them, and they published it widely. Once again, the reason for not wanting to announce seems to have been to desire to keep the excitement at a minimum. They did not obey him. It has been written, like most people, they would rather praise Jesus than obey him. And I thought that was a good observation. It's much more easier and exciting to just praise Jesus than to actually obey Jesus. Yeah.
I know. Because, you know, the gratefulness of all of this, it's just like, it'd be hard to just say, I can't tell you.
You could say, you'll soon find out. You have to remember this too, but Jesus is widely known. I mean, he just fed you know, 10,000-15,000. So his name is around. And so for him to get his work done, he needs some maneuverability so that he can be able to get from one place to the next, to the next.
Sometimes they say after they told him about it, he could go, who come in?
Right. Right.
Pretend like you're still
okay. No doubt about it. And honestly, I probably would have fallen in the category of these that would have violated that and said, you know, I want you to know. I want you to know. And so, again, these are all tests for us to remember that he knows what's best. And in the end, you know, people will know. I mean, we're about to read him feeding the 4,000 men. So even by him saying, you know, press the brakes, apply the brakes, it's still spreading like wildfire. And many, many thousands are coming to Jesus.
That's like the best way people say, I will perform miracles or do all these things. You know, we got Facebook, internet, we got smartphones, and we ain't never seen anybody heal or raise no dead. Jesus, they never have anything for everybody to know.
That's right. That's right. He was the only one that could do such things. Nobody could do this. And that was part of the sign, was that, you know, why is he so special? Because of who he is. So that was by design. So let's look at next why Jesus is so special. We see it again, a great feeding take place in chapter 8, verse 1. In those days, the multitude being very great and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, I've had compassion on the multitude because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their own houses, they will faint on the way. For some have come from afar. So before we read of the miracle, notice what Jesus observes about the people. Number one, there in verse 2, they had been with Jesus a long time. You know, it was like I would say a gospel meeting, you know, a weekend gospel meeting, but that wouldn't be accurate. They were with him the whole time, those days. And so whatever food they had, that supply had now become exhausted. And so the Lord recognizes these people are not here because of food's sake. This is different than what we saw there in John chapter 6. These people are here for what's being taught. And now I'm concerned about their actual physical well-being. Are they going to be okay? And so verse 3, he says that some had come from afar. And he knows that for them to get home without the meal is just not going to happen. They're going to pass out due to exhaustion. And so the Lord wants to take care of this. This is not some kind of social meal kind of occasion. This is about benevolence, seeing to the needs of these individuals here so that they won't faint. So verse 4, then his disciples answered him, how can one satisfy these people with bread here in the wilderness? He asked them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. So he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground. And he took 7 loaves and gave thanks, broke them and gave them to his disciples to set before them. And they set them before the multitude. They also had a few small fish, and having blessed them, he said to set them also before them. So they ate and were filled. And they took up 7 large baskets of leftover fragments. Now those who had eaten were about 4,000. And he sent them away. Immediately got into the boat with his disciples and came to the region of Dalmatia. So there's the great miracle. Before it was 5,000 men, here's about 4,000 men, and with women and children, maybe 10 to 12,000. And he does very similar to what he had done before. Now, can you point out some of the differences and similarities?
The number of fish and loaves of bread was, I was just looking it up here, it was 5 loaves in Matthew and 2 fish and a little boy at it. And here it was the seven loaves and a few small fish that were just among the people there. I think some of the disciples,
Okay, so the number of bread and fish, there's some differences there. Yeah, something had been done earlier, right? Why would they say, what can we do?
So they were in the wilderness.
Okay.
I mean, there was no place to go.
Right.
They were far from anywhere.
But like Sister Ross said, they'd seen Jesus do this before.
Like they still hadn't quite comprehended.
Perhaps that. I think that. I also wonder if perhaps also that they saw how sternly Jesus had rebuked those that had come to him for the loaves and the fishes before. And they asked for it again, and Jesus said, nope, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And so perhaps they thought, he's already said that that's the end of that. So that could be another reason why. So a combination of that, perhaps even not comprehending Jesus, they're still young in some regards. Okay, what else is different? Okay. I set them before the multitude, it says there. All right, now what about how much they gathered up? What's that, Brandy? That's right.
And seven.
All right, seven large baskets. They are two different Greek words. Someone said this can be descriptive of like a hamper, or sometimes these sacks large enough for a man to be in. So he starts off with seven loaves there, and then they've got seven hamper-sized baskets, whereas before it was 12 smaller-sized baskets. So that's the great miracle, isn't it? I mean, you end up with more than you had to begin with. And everybody was fed in the process as well. There was a time that Brother Hafley was debating a Pentecostal who believed in modern-day miracles, and he said, you're going to witness one today. Brother Hafley, I've got this piece of bread, and I'm going to feed this entire audience with this piece of bread. And so he said that he handed it out, each one grabbing a pinch of the bread. And I think it was a crowd of a couple hundred. And so he got up and said, there you go. We fed this entire audience with this one little piece of bread. I've worked a miracle for you. And Brother Hafley got up and said, no, the miracle would be that you have more left over than what you began with. That he could not work, of course. That's what Jesus did. The miracle of creation was at work here. And all of them were fed with plenty left over. That's right. And it was probably was distributed among the multitude as they would then go home. Because we're going to read later on, the disciples, they only had one loaf with them later. They forgot to take some extras.
Also, they were filled, so it's not
that
they just
had a little taste.
Right, yeah. So if they were famished and the Lord was afraid of them fainting, that was taken care of. They had enough in despair. That's right, yeah, the little pinch would not have, they still would have, blood sugar would have dropped and everything,
It tells me those people didn't eat as much in 3 days back then as we would now, when I think about how they're carrying enough food to last for 3 days.
And they're, we're more used to, feast and famine, some would fast, and so that they knew how to make it last. But Jesus knew the supply was exhausted. But these people, I love the determination. How many of us would be with the Lord, put our lives on hold so that we could be with the Lord these days and to sit and to listen to Him, to watch Him do these mighty works? I mean, it would just be a tremendous thing, and these people were willing.
Just 3 times a week.
Yeah, 3 hours a week is too much for some. That's true. That's true.
It's interesting they all got into a boat at the end.
Yes. Uh huh. Right, right. It's true. He knew they had to go, and he had to go. The work had to keep going. Anybody else? Nancy?
You know, I'm going to take up for us. I believe if we had seen Jesus and seen him doing these things, we might be there. We might be there. You know, I know we're busy with the work thing, but I'm saying if we had actually Jesus came today and was doing these things, I think it would click in our head. There's something unusual about this man. I want to see more. I don't know. Maybe.
No, thanks for taking up for us. I'd like to believe that is our heart. You know? And that we'd realize, you know, that's seeking first the kingdom. All right.
What they're seeing is something different.
Yeah. Right.
And it traveled by word of mouth. There was no mass communication. There was no radio. There was no television. It was just individual
right.
And it is a small area over
right.
there. I mean, you used to travel from Bowling Green to Lexington, but if there was somebody there actually doing it.
Right.
But Jesus.
This is, and it's just such large crowds for the area, like you said.
Maybe I put too much faith in this.
There you go.
Look, their lifestyles and environment is so much different than ours, though. You know, just what they did daily is different.
That's true. That's true. And what they would do for entertainment purposes often was good for the soul, spiritually.
Well, part of this country, you know, people go to meetings.
Right.
For entertainment, you know what I'm saying.
The days before TV and radio, people would pick up the Bible so that they could learn, and that was entertainment. That's right. That's right. And so Satan has done well in distracting us from what is truly food for the soul. Okay, Sister Ross and then Sister Liz.
And I thought so great the gospel. We used to have 10 meetings for 2 weeks, and now they can't say
that. So true. Sister Liz.
I was thinking, I don't know if you mentioned this, but what time
is it? Oh, yes. We mentioned that last time. The public prayer.
That, yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't do it just the one time.
Right.
He did it, you know.
And it wasn't to be seen by men.
No.
Yeah. That's right. Anybody else?
Since we just finished Thanksgiving, some of us went and prepared meals and worked for 2 or 3 days. I think it would have been on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have liked to have been there. I would have liked to have seen Jesus.
Yeah.
I'd like to have seen him doing these things. I really would have liked to have been there.
And one day we shall see him as he is. You know.
Now we see him in face.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Very good. Good comments, everybody. So the Lord did this, and it's a wonderful thing, and we take encouragement from it because, again, we see His care and concern for the human being, and especially those that were interested in Him. So what we see next, it ought to strike us as bizarre and odd, because in verse 11 it says, "Then the Pharisees came out and began a dispute with Him, seeking from Him a sign from heaven, testing Him. And He sighed deeply in His spirit and said, 'Why does this generation seek a sign? Assuredly, I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation.'" I mean, just the greatest thing could have ever been done was just done. And part of the reason these Pharisees are coming this way is because they've heard it. It's the word has spread. And they don't like this Jesus, especially what He represents. And so we got to discredit Him. Show us a sign from heaven. Well, he had just done a great sign from heaven. Look at Matthew's account, Matthew 15. Matthew gives us some more details. In Matthew 15, well, verse 39, you see the last verse there. He sent away the multitude, got into the boat, and came to the region of Magdala. Verse 1 of chapter 16, then the Pharisees and Sadducees came, testing him, and asked that he would show them a sign from heaven. So here Matthew says that the Sadducees were there as well. Now, why is that intriguing?
Problems between the Pharisees and the Sadducees.
They weren't best buds, were they? No, they were enemies.
Common goal.
That's right.
That's to bring down Jesus.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
And so here... here, you know, they strike hands, they put aside differences so that they might tackle, they see in their mind a greater enemy. But they were at opposite ends of the spectrum, religiously speaking. And their differences were great and deep. In fact, the Apostle Paul later on would utilize that so that he might be able to break away from a dissension that was growing. Look at Acts 25 or 23, excuse me. In Acts chapter 23, and all this adds depth and detail to the story that we're reading. In Acts 23, look at verse 7. 23:7 says, when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For the Sadducees say there is no resurrection and no angel or spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. And there arose a loud outcry, and the scribes of the Pharisees' party arose and protested, saying, we find no evil in this man. But if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. Well, the Sadducees, they couldn't stand such a message. That goes directly opposed to their doctrines. And so there was a deep divide between those two camps. But here, when Jesus is walking around, gathering multitudes, they think, let's put those differences aside and let's try to deal with this problem of Jesus. Let's ask him to show us a sign from heaven. So back there in Matthew 16, Jesus answered them and said in verse 2, when it is evening, you say, it'll be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it'll be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites, you know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the sign of the times. So, there was a saying that shepherds would have, and that, you know, a red sky at night was a shepherd's delight, and then a red sky in the morning was a shepherd's warning. So they could understand that the time of day that red sky was taking place meant something that was going to come. And he says, what about the sign of the times that you see now? You probably heard that phrase a lot of times, the sign of the times. And they're talking about something taking place today, you know, or in Iraq or the Middle East, or it's a sign of the times. When the Lord used that phrase, he was referring to his coming then. You know, what you see taking place, what you hear from these multitudes. What does that say to you? It should say something. And so verse 4, he says, a wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. No sign shall be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed. So this people, this crowd coming to him, he says, they're wicked, they're adulterous, and I'm not going to grant their request. Just like in John 6, when they were coming to Jesus for food, he didn't grant their request either. Now, he did say there was a sign that they all knew about in the Old Testament. The sign of the prophet Jonah. Now, what was that to indicate? What was the sign of the times for that?
Well, Jonah was in the mouth of a great fish for 3 days. And then Jesus was going to be resurrected from his grave in 3 days.
That's right. And so that was something that they're going to have to watch for. And remember that Jesus had said this after he is crucified and then raised from the dead. You know, you're trying to do your best to teach your children when they start using biblical phrases. When we went to Papa and Mimi's, we had to take Cody to the doctor. He had some kind of blood vessel take place, and he was sad that we had to take him away from Papa and Mimi's for a little bit to the doctors in Hendersonville. And he said he was sad. He wanted to get back to the house there. And I said, well, how long do you want to be there? And he said, I'd like to be at Papa and Mimi's for 3 days and 3 nights. So I thought, well, he's paying attention, I guess, to some of the lessons and phrases. I said, it was awful biblical stay there that he wanted to have at the grandparents. Oh, kids, they say the greatest things. Well, here, that's what the Lord was asking these wise and noble men to look for, the sign of the prophet Jonah, for it will come to pass very shortly. In fact, they say we're within that year period now, perhaps even 9 months or so, till the death of the Lord. Any comments about this here? I agree. I think so. I think about what Nicodemus said. Remember there in John 3 when he said, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher come from God, for no one can do these signs that you do unless God is with him. Of course, Nicodemus was a Pharisee. So he saw signs and he witnessed it, and he realized there's just no explanation to this except he is a man from God. And then in John chapter 7, when the Pharisees were irate about Jesus again, and there was a discussion about it, in John chapter 7, verse 50, Nicodemus, he who came to Jesus by night, being one of them, said to them, does our law judge a man before it hears him and knows what he is doing? And they answered and said to him, are you also from Galilee? Search and look, for no prophet has arisen out of Galilee. So Jesus had done these signs that we've been reading in that Galilee region. That's where a lot of people were drawing near to him. And so by Nicodemus saying, hey, look, you know, we understand that you got to hear him out. Just be fair. They immediately say, you must be from Galilee, that region. And Nicodemus, his dispute was just kind of put aside. So I think some did see, and some did believe, at least Nicodemus did. And it makes it all the more ridiculous that they would come and ask him to do a sign. Because signs had been done and some of them had witnessed it. And by Jesus even asking, what do the sign of the times tell you? Mean that he knew some were aware. Any other comments?
So these people don't really want it. You know, because if they did, first of all, they should know the law. They should know. Yeah. Without him saying anything, all the stuff he's done, they should already know. But they don't want it.
Yeah.
And that's why he's not going to oblige anything they're saying, because he already knows. And he's giving them everything they should already need if they wanted it.
Right. And that's an interesting observation. The people that had all the book smarts were not the ones that were coming to him wholesale. You know, it was the people that knew that they had a problem. They needed some fixing. Many of them were physical problems, but some were also spiritual as well. But all the physical problems that were being healed and taken care of, the Lord said, so that you may know the Son of Man has power to forgive sins on earth, I say to you, rise and walk. And so he was always connecting it with the spiritual lesson. And that goes kind of what we see in our world today, if you think about it. A lot of folks have a lot of book smarts out there. But until they recognize that they have a problem, a sin problem, a spiritual problem, and they need spiritual healing, they will not see Jesus for who Jesus is and what he can do in giving that to an individual and leading them to the true kingdom of God.
Yes. Ecclesiastes 12:12. Solomon says, "And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study wearing flesh."
Right.
I have read and know it has been said to me that men read more books written about the Bible than they read the Bible.
The Bible. That's right.
And that's up there.
And that. That leads a lot of problems, doesn't it? Because they put their faith and confidence in the wrong books. That's right. That's right. Well, I'm going to end on time. Thank you all for your good comments. Mark your place here in Matthew 16, verse 5. We'll pick up there where Jesus warns about the leaven of the Pharisees, scribes, and Herod.